Welcome to CanTalk 2.0, a podcast by the Goethe Institute Cyprus on the occasion of 300 years since the birth of Immanuel Kant. I am Dr. Christos Hadjioannou, academic philosopher and the host of this podcast, and in the company of Hambis Damianou, stand-up comedian.
Hello.
We will be looking at Kant's work in today's context. Kant's work is considered to be the pinnacle of the philosophy of the Enlightenment. In each episode, we are joined by international guest experts on Kant to ask them what Kant would think about specific situations and examples from today, from artificial intelligence to lying on dating apps. What is it like to look at his ideas from almost 300 years ago through the lens of today? Can we still learn from him? In today's episode, Is Lying on Dating Apps Wrong? We will be talking about whether it is okay to lie on dating apps from the perspective of Immanuel Kant's moral theory. Hambis, you had a couple of questions for me.
Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Hambis, and I am a Cypriot stand-up comedian, and I'm very much interested in Kant's philosophy and whether his thought is still relevant to contemporary issues that we are facing today. So, Christos, as you know, I'm a 27-year-old heterosexual cis man living in Cyprus, and being heterosexual undoubtedly makes my life easier in many ways. I'm not saying that this is right or that this is how things ought to be, but in 2024, in Cyprus, it is still a fact. One factor that makes it easier to be heterosexual in Cyprus is dating. No one will judge you if you flirt with opposite sex, etc., okay? But my situation hasn't been exactly ideal. Though it has not been as difficult as for a homosexual man, it still was always difficult for me to flirt, ask someone out on a date, be in a relationship, and all that. I didn't know how to make a good first impression. I always used to say, all you have to do is to be honest and authentic. But that rarely went well for me. So I created a profile on a dating app for fun and started chatting with women. There was one situation in which I was so interested, and she asked me what kind of job I had. I was unemployed at the time, so I lied. And then we had a discussion week after week, and we chatted, and she asked me if I was a virgin. I said no, so I lied again. As you may have expected, it didn't go well. But I'm wondering now, if it had ended going really, really well and we got married and we were very, very happy together, would that lie, that white lie, be such a problem? Is there such a thing as white lie in Kant's philosophy? Where does the ethical line stand?
Okay, interesting, Hambis. I think... So your question is, what would Immanuel Kant say about white lies if he would consider a white lie as morally acceptable?
Yes.
Okay, so the question here has to do with the way we define the morally good and the morally bad.
Okay.
This goes all the way back to Plato's question in the Republic, in which he asks about how we define the good. What makes something good good? Is something good because of the consequences it produces, or is it good for its own sake? Or is something good for its own sake and the consequences it produces? For example, is honesty good for its own sake, regardless of the results it produces? Or is honesty good because of the consequences it produces? Or is it a combination of both? So what does Kant have to say? Kant was not interested in giving a list of good and bad actions. Rather, he tried to provide us with general rules so that we can decide for ourselves. For this reason, he analyzed the conditions of possibility of the good. That means he described the foundations of moral goodness. If we agree on the foundations, on the basis of goodness, then we can judge for ourselves each time we are faced with an ethical dilemma. So what does he base the morally good action on the consequences or on something else? So since Kant was anxious to make room for freedom and morality, it meant that he could not approach moral judgment in the same way as utilitarians, for example, would look at the consequences in a chain of causal events. Kant looks away from nature and space and time and considers the moral act as one that is based on laws of reason, but not on the laws of nature, which leave no room for freedom. So Kant grounds moral action on the following concepts. On the concept of the goodwill and the concepts of duty and the categorical imperative. Kant's theory is what we would call deontological. The word deontology derives from the Greek words deon, which means duty or obligation, and logos, which in this context means study.
I know them.
Being a Greek speaker, you know them. So it is a study of duties. That means that the rightfulness or wrongfulness of an act is a matter of duties that bind us all the time. They're not contingent upon experience or upon consequences in nature. An action is right or wrong based on rules that apply a priori regardless of consequences. So if we act out of moral duty, then the act is necessarily good, independently from the results it may or may not produce.
So I have a question here. I have an example to put my question. Let's say I'm walking down the street, okay? I see an old person who wants to cross the road. Well, I'm not in the mood or I have any desire to cross the road with them. I know that I have the duty to help them. So I decide to act against my boredom, but one of a sense of duty to help the old guy cross the road, okay? However, while helping them cross the road, I miscalculate the distance and the speed and they get injured or they get hit by a car. I don't know. Anyway, does this consequence make my act bad or after all, or is it good anyway?
Okay, so, I mean, according to Kant, no, it's not bad.
Okay.
It was a good act because you acted out of duty. What are these duties and how are they constituted? Well, they are duties that we have towards the moral law. They grow out of our respect for the moral law itself. So how do we decide that what exact duties we have? Is there a fundamental principle that organizes our moral duties? And the answer is yes. That's the categorical imperative.
Okay.
The categorical imperative is like the supreme principle of morality. It is the most fundamental rule that organizes and justifies all moral duties we have. For example, the duty to respect other persons or the duty to not treat other persons as instruments. Mm-hmm. So the categorical imperative is a general rule that tells us what our duties are. Now, the categorical imperative, it is an imperative because it commands us. It is like a commandment that is imposed on moral agents. And then moral agents can freely choose to submit to it and obey to it or not. And it is categorical because it works like a universal category. It applies universally and unconditionally, right? So it applies in all cases and circumstances, and it is binding to all reasonable persons.
Yeah, but I have another question here. What makes us want to obey the categorical imperative and the duties that follow from it? Do we have something inside us that motivates to commit to the good and the act of duty? Something that is pure and stable and can serve like a moral compass?
Ah, well, yes, says Kant.
Okay.
It's what he calls the goodwill. So the goodwill is like an inherent goodness each person has. The goodwill is what commits each person to want to make decisions that are morally worthy. The goodwill is good under all circumstances and commits the person to the good independently from the particular circumstances of the situation or desires, conflicting desires. But the goodwill, according to Kant, is not just another desire or just another motive like any other. Rather, it is somehow connected to reason. Confusing as it all may sound, I've asked Professor Dieter Schönecker, who is a Kant expert and professor of practical philosophy at the University of Siegen in Germany, I wonder if you could enlighten us and tell us what is the goodwill? And secondly, it seems that the goodwill is somehow connected to reason. So a question that comes to my mind is if, according to Kant, one can have goodwill if they have, say, mental disabilities or learning disabilities.
Yes, the concept of a goodwill and the concept of reason are indeed intrinsically tied together. At one place in the groundwork, Kant even says that the will is nothing but practical reason. The reason for this is that the goodwill is the will that determines itself by the laws of reason, that is, by categorical imperatives. Now, it is important to understand Kant's concept of a goodwill on the background of what Kant calls a holy will. A holy will is the will of a person that is not under the influences of desires and inclinations, or at least lets herself not be determined by such desires. Such a perfect person always or necessarily acts morally. To her, the moral law is not an imperative, that is, it is not a duty which always involves some kind of coercion, and be it self-coercion. But for human beings, moral laws are such imperatives. To be sure, all human beings do have a good will in the sense of having a will that as such wants to be good. This is why Kant says that the moral ought is actually a volition. But again, desires kick in, they pull in another direction, and the actual will that deserves to be called good, that is, the will of a real human being, is the will that is determined, or at least determined in principle, to act morally. This self-determination to be good is the effect of what Kant calls the feeling of respect. Reason is not only does not only bring about moral laws that tell me how to act, reason also makes me want the good by that feeling. So yes, a person that is mentally handicapped will not be able to have a good will proper. Now, another aspect I would like to stress is the following. An important aspect of Kant's concept of a good will is that it is not good because it succeeds in bringing about actual good consequences. On a simple level, this almost goes without saying. A medical doctor may be said to have a good will to save his patient's life, even if he does not succeed in doing so. If he acts properly and does his very best, he deserves recognition as having a good will, even if the patient dies. But Kant is what philosophers call a non-consequentialist. The goodness of a good will and also of actions do not depend, or at least do not depend solely, on the actual outcome. If that were true, as consequentialists claim it is, then we may say that the end, any possible good consequence, always justifies the means. But Kant argues that persons as ends in themselves have an absolute value that must never be violated, even if such an act might bring about good consequences. You may not, for instance, torture an innocent person to find out where an atomic bomb, say, of terrorists is hidden.
It is important to note how for Kant, persons with learning disabilities or mental illness are excluded from having a goodwill proper, and we would have to see if and what kind of ableism this could amount to, and whether Kant's moral theory could be revised in light of changes in perceptions that have occurred on this topic. But that would be a topic for another podcast episode.
Yeah, I have another question. Okay. Do I have a perfect duty to not lie to anyone under any conditions whatsoever? Aren't duties context dependent? What about white lies? Okay, I will give two examples of white lies on dating apps that they are universally considered morally permissible by the community using the apps. We all agree that dating apps are there to serve specific purpose, to facilitate dating and bring people together, and that these two white lies serve the purpose well. One, is it okay in the conversation we have with someone to describe ourselves in a more positive light so as to make ourselves more attractive? And the second one is it okay to use untrue excuses in order to avoid telling the other person, let's say, we don't want to go to a second date with them?
When it comes to lying, it is a commonplace in the literature on Kant that he is a rigorist. In a famous little piece called On the Supposed Right to Lie Because of Philanthropy, Kant discusses a scenario that can easily be applied to more recent situations. Imagine yourself giving shelter to some Jewish friends in your home. Hamas terrorists come by and ask whether you have seen any Jews hiding in the building. Now, Kant seems to say that you must not lie even in such a scenario. Lying is always wrong, so it seems, so it is wrong here too. But in his Metaphysics of Morals, Kant offers a different picture. There, Kant distinguishes between so-called narrow and wide duties. Narrow duties are duties of omission. They tell you what not to do. For instance, they tell you never to kill an innocent human being, and so they never allow for an exception. Wide duties, however, have what Kant calls latitude. You can fulfill a wide duty in one way or another. For instance, the wide duty of benevolence depends on all kinds of circumstances. How much money do you have, how much time, how many persons are needy, and so on. Therefore, wide duties come along with so-called casuistical questions. That is, questions that are hard to answer exactly because such duties allow for latitude. And in the Metaphysics of Morals, interestingly, Kant understands the duty not to lie as a wide duty, not as a narrow duty. In the casuistical questions related to this wide duty, Kant poses the question of whether a reader of a certain book may lie if she is asked by the author of the book, "How do you like my work?" Kant does not provide the answer to this difficult casuistical question, but the context makes it clear that it is not necessarily negative. So even for Kant, white lies might be permissible. Now, to get to the white lies in dating apps, I would say with Kant the following. It's not okay to depict oneself in the self-description section in positive light with a bit of hyperbole so as to make oneself more attractive. For this is clearly an act of deceiving, if only an act of self-deceit. White lies are particularly dubious if they serve one's own interest. It is also not okay to use untrue excuses if one doesn't want to go on a second date. Note, however, that the duty not to lie is not to be confused with the general duty to provide answers. If you are asked why you do not want to go on a second date, you are not necessarily obliged to give an answer.
Of course, one would be justified in using other examples. For example, we can imagine a scenario where a state army that does not abide by rules of war or human rights asks you whether you've seen any innocent civilians in the building. In any case, there you go, Hambis. You have your answers.
Yes.
According to Kant, there are narrow duties and there are wide duties, and narrow duties are stricter in their scope and application and don't allow for much leeway. And then on the other hand, wide duties involve so-called casuistry, meaning they operate on a case-by-case scenario. Casuistry derives from the Latin word casus, which means case.
Mm-hmm.
And Therefore, they demand reflection on the specific case. However, the type of lie involved in what you describe is an act of deceiving, according to Professor Schoenecker, which is not okay.
Okay, I will never lie again. Dating app.
Okay, so have, there you go. Yeah. You got your answer.
Yeah. I have a girlfriend now, so I'm okay.
Well, thank you for joining us. I am Dr. Christos Hadjioannou.
And I am Hambis Damianou.
Thank you for listening to CanTalk 2.0 and for joining us as we try to answer the question of what would Kant say about lying on dating apps.